Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to your one-stop shop for horror news, true crime, and real-life tales of the unexplained. Monsters at Midnight, The Revenge. Episodes of Monsters upload on a bi-weekly format every other Saturday. I'm your host, your favorite escape madman loose on the airwaves, terrorizing your eardrums, Matt Schaefer. Today, we're going to be talking about the journey of the horror movie sequel, and looking at some examples for their dubious reputation. Lock your doors, bolt your windows, and turn out the lights. Monsters at Midnight, The Motherfucking Revenge rides again. I wanted to come to you with a review of Saw X, but life has been a little chaotic as of recently, but in a good way. I just started a new job, and I haven't really had a whole lot of time to go to the movies, but I'm hoping by the next episode I will be able to give you a review of Saw X. But it got me thinking about horror movie sequels, especially since we're in October, baby. Happy October. And as you may know, for the past several years now on my personal Facebook, I've done the Schaefer Shocktober marathon, where I just do a little post about different horror movies that either I've been watching or you should watch, or movies I want to check out and then somehow never end up checking out. But this year I wanted to switch things up and do intentionally like really corny or really bad or sometimes some of the worst horror movies that I've seen. And by the fourth day, I realized that a lot of my list was comprised of sequels, which makes sense. You hear that a lot. The sequel's never as good as the original, and you hear that a lot, especially with horror movies. That's not always necessarily the case, but it got me thinking, why do sequels, why do horror movie sequels get such a bad reputation? And I thought maybe it would just be something that we can chew the fat about, for a while here, because I don't know, I'm pretty strapped for ideas for this show. God willing and The Creek Don't Rise, we'll be getting Jolynn back on soon. I can't make any promises as to when, but it's going to be immensely helpful to have her back here on the show. I think to analyze why horror movie sequels get such a bad reputation, you kind of have to look at the sequel itself. I've seen numerous interviews with filmmakers and behind-the-scenes featurettes and stuff, where if they're talking about going into development on a sequel, and granted, and mind you, this is usually movies that came out in, like, the 70s or 80s, they always generally share the same sentiment, where they're like, they always say something to the degree of, like, you have to remember, back in the day, sequels weren't really a thing. Like people didn't make sequels. Which just isn't true when you look at things. They always use, I forget which interview it was for what movie, but someone uses Lassie as an example. They're like, Lassie was a series. Like, Lassie got sequels. You didn't see sequels to that, blah, 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 blah. Which, like, true. I mean, you look at, like, stuff like that. Like, Lassie did have sequels. Like, Herbie the Love Bug got sequels. But there were plenty of movies that were more quote-unquote adult that were getting sequels at the time. There's, like, 8 million Planet of the Apes movies it's like stunning how many Planet of the Apes movies there are. And even like a little movie you may have never heard of called The Godfather got a sequel, which also won a Best Picture and a ton of other Academy Awards. So I disagree with this belief that sequels were not common, or sequels were not, like, a viable, like, respectable continuation or filmmaking process. I think that they were. It's just, I feel like everything is perspective, and because the idea of the franchise as we know it today wasn't as common back then. But in a matter of speaking, it kind of was. If you look to horror movies, I can't be certain of this, because I am not a journalist, and I didn't feel like doing much research for this episode, because this is the best podcast yet I heard. But I'm pretty sure the first, like, horror movie sequel to be released was Bride of Frankenstein, only 4 years after the original was released in 1935. It had the same leading actors, well, two of the same leading actors returning, Colin Clive and Boris Karloff, and was a literal direct continuation of the first movie. It took place, like, pretty much 5 minutes after the original movie finished up, which is a trope that you still see even today with movies like John Wick 3, and even in later horror movie sequels like Halloween 2, both Halloween 2s, and Halloween Kills, all three Halloween 2s. But beyond that, like, all of the big Universal horror movie icons were getting sequels. And not only that, they were getting crossover movies with movies of, like, House of Frankenstein. And it's not technically a part of the same canon, I don't think, but, like, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. The Universal monsters had their own cinematic universe, their own shared universe. It's very interesting to go back and see that, like, this idea of, like, oh, nobody made sequels. In the 30s and 40s and 50s, Universal was doing all this shit with their main prolific monsters. Dracula, the Frankenstein monster, the Invisible Man. They all showed up in each other's movies at some point or another. Now, it's difficult to find, like, I guess it's not that difficult to find. I'm just looking at Facebook or at Wikipedia here. But to the argument that maybe they weren't as financially successful, I'm looking at the budget versus box office for Bride of Frankenstein. The budget was $397,000. Which I would have an inflation calculator up, but actually, let's do that. That'll be interesting. So, to the argument of them, of it potentially not being as financially lucrative, let's see. 1935, $397,000. Okay, so, damn, Jesus Christ. Okay, so, in today's money, Bride of Frankenstein cost roughly $9 million to make. In today's money. That is banana sandwiches to me. And made, at the box office in 1935 money, $2 million, according to Wikipedia, that is. Which is roughly $45 million. That's a profit for your fucking ass, dude. That made more than triple its budget, which is what you want when you're making a movie like that, because you have to pay for, like, royalties and advertising and all that other shit that you don't think about when a movie like that is being made. So I also disagree with this concept that these movies weren't lucrative. And as we would see as we would move into the 70s and 80s, they would most certainly be lucrative, with movies like the Nightmare on Elm Street series and the Friday the 13th series just being cash cows, getting entries released almost annually. In the case of Friday the 13th, pretty much annually. Because they could be made for cheap, and they could turn a massive profit. But this kind of ties into the negative reception, or the negative stigma around these sort of sequels. Especially in the case of the slasher film. The sort of horror icon franchise, the sequels get a bad rep. And it's understandable. There are only so many ideas that you can pursue which without the risk of jumping the shark, which is something that you see in some of these series. You see it in Hellraiser. There's a, like, Hellraiser movie that's in the internet or something like that. I don't know. I haven't seen many of the Hellraiser movies. There's, of course, Jason X, which I think successfully jumps the shark and makes that movie way more entertaining than a couple of the previous entries because of how unapologetically goofy it is. And then you have sort of stuff like Halloween 6, The Curse of Michael Myers, which goes way too far into backstory and explanation of Michael Myers and his origin, which doesn't always work. So there is a limited font of ideas that you can draw from in these series. Especially with some of those big-name franchises, it's definitely a case of just stacking bodies, just another reason for hacking and slashing to happen. And that stems even all the way to the modern era with the Saw films. However, there are some exceptions to the rule. Obviously, Evil Dead 2 is a great sequel. Army of Darkness, great sequel. I don't need to talk more about those any more than I already have. But there are a couple of horror movie sequels that I do kind of want to chat about that are very interesting to me for completely different reasons. That have just loathsomely negative reviews. Two sequels to very popular, very widely considered to be good horror movies that just got lambasted on their release. Let's talk about the first one. The other night I watched Exorcist II: The Heretic. Now, this is a movie I have heard about for years. I remember James Rolfe covering it on his Cinemassacre's Monster Madness series. I remember the Nostalgia Critic. Rest in peace. He's not dead, but I don't. It just seems appropriate to say nowadays. I remember the Nostalgia Critic's review of it. And something about this movie always captured my interest. I always thought it just looked so wild and weird, and it definitely is. What's even weirder is that I could not find myself hating this movie. I thought this movie was kind of cool. I was kind of into it. It is not a perfect movie. If someone came up to me and said, "That's the worst movie I've ever seen," I wouldn't really have much of an inkling to disagree with them. Especially being a sequel to The Exorcist, it is a drastically different movie. However, one of my favorite sequels and one of my favorite movies of all time is Evil Dead 2, which, granted, has more in common with the first Evil Dead than Exorcist 2 has with the first Exorcist, but it still goes tonally in a very different direction. And that's sort of the case for Exorcist 2. Give a brief synopsis of Exorcist 2 here. It's 4 years later. What does she remember? Bizarre nightmares plague Regan McNeil 4 years after her possession and exorcism. Has the demon returned? And if so, can the combined faith and knowledge of a Vatican investigator and a hypnotic research specialist free her from its grasp? That's a pretty good synopsis. That's really all you need to know before getting into the nitty-gritty of things. This is a bizarre movie, but I really kind of dug it. It is a whole-ass vibe. It is one of the most 70s-looking movies I've ever seen. This is a gorgeous-looking movie. It is directed by John Borman, and I guess ghost-directed by Rospo Pallenberg. I don't know. It's always in big text credited as John Borman's Exorcist 2, The Heretic. But on Letterboxd, shockingly, this movie had a troubled development. So I don't know the full story about this movie. I've heard stories about the lead actor who plays, what's his character's name? Father Lamont was apparently drunk the entire time. I've heard that there was apparently a first edit of this movie that was so bad it was booed out of theaters. And most famously, the scene that sees Linda Blair standing on the edge of her apartment balcony in New York City. There were no safety measures in place at all. I've heard that there was just a lot of shit that went down behind the scenes. God is angry, I guess. Or the demons are angry, just like they were with the first Exorcist. But I want to see the cinematography by William A. Fraker. Bravo, man. This movie is gorgeous looking. There is a constant juxtaposition between this very sterile sci-fi research facility, sort of mental children's hospital. Almost Kubrickian with its, rooms of just made of glass that you can see through everything. The camera's always shooting through glass. There's reflections everywhere. And juxtaposed with these just sweaty, uncomfortably hot, gritty, dirty African landscapes that are also shot gorgeously. I also do like the theming of this movie of tying the demon Pazuzu back to its more ancient roots in ancient religion, and the thematic use of the locust as well. It gets to be a little bit much, but I thought at least was interesting. This movie is taking broad strides to distinguish itself from the first Exorcist, because I can't find any. I remember looking for it before. Again, haven't done any research for this episode because I'm bad and dumb and stupid, but I remember hearing somewhere that John Borman apparently hated the first Exorcist, which would make sense given that this is the movie that he made, because it has very little to want or to do with the first Exorcist. There's some stuff towards the end that feels sort of obligatory. Might have been studio notes, especially if there was a re-edit to this movie. Because there is stuff that takes place back in the original house. The finale of this movie is batshit. I kind of love it. But also simultaneously, it seems like everyone forgets how to act in the back 20 minutes of this movie. A weird fucking movie. And like I said, I can't necessarily defend this as a good movie. I just happen to really like it, considering the dubious nature that it has, or the dubious reputation that it has. So, and the reputation purely comes from the fact that it's not as thematically or stylistically similar to the original. That's why Exorcist 3 often gets more positive reviews because it has a little bit more in common with the first Exorcist, and it also has the William Peter Blatty connection too, given that he wrote and directed it based off his book Legion. I actually don't know what William Peter Blatty had to say about this movie. I'd be genuinely curious to hear his thoughts. Exorcist 3 is great, though, too. I need to rewatch that movie. That is a chilling movie. But yeah, something about this movie I kind of dug. I was invested the entire time, which is weird because I've consistently heard how, like, drab and boring this movie is. And there are some scenes with, what's her name? Louise Fletcher? I think that's her name. Yeah, Louise Fletcher's character and Linda Blair in the Inception mind link device where they're going into each other's psychic thoughts that do drag on a little too long. But for the most part, at just 2 hours, I thought it moved at a fairly decent clip. And again, gorgeous cinematography, bizarre and insane and beautiful Ennio Morricone soundtrack that I love that should get a vinyl release because there's some crazy ass music on it. But yeah, no, ultimately, this is one of the best bad movies, quote unquote, that I've seen in a long time. I do understand the hate it gets because it is such a drastic departure from the predecessor. And that this is sort of one of the earliest horror movie sequels that I can think of that gets, like legendarily bad reviews. That, like, even people that aren't horror movie fans probably know that this movie gets a bad rep. I want to talk about one other movie here for you that that also has a special place in my heart thanks to the Nostalgia Critic. It actually is a bad movie, but one that I would happily watch any day of the week, and that's Book of Shadows, Blair Witch 2. Blair Witch 2 is a delight. It is one of the hammiest, stupidest horror movies I have ever had the pleasure of seeing. I fucking love something about Blair Witch 2. It is undeniably trash. It is undeniably trash. But buried deep beneath the nonsensical script, baffling editing, and hammy acting is an actual good idea for a sequel to Blair Witch. Let's get a synopsis real quick here. Evil doesn't die. Young adults become fascinated by the events of the three missing filmmakers in Maryland, so they decide to go into the same woods and find out what really happened. Yeah, so this sort of goes the meta route. Coming out in 2000, this was off the tail of Wes Craven's New Nightmare and Scream. Meta commentary in your horror films was in at this time. So this goes under the conceit that the first Blair Witch is real. It actually happened. And it's a group of tourists and filmmakers and writers, if I remember correctly, going into the woods and investigating, and obviously shit turning kind of sideways for them. This, I saw a great list on Letterboxd the other day of nu metal movies, and this was on the list because, like, this is a nu metal movie. You've got a Wicca character, or a Wiccan character, excuse me. You've got the obligatory goth girl character, and you've got just a hard-ass butt rock soundtrack that the movie opens with Disposable Teens by Marilyn Manson. That should set you up for the kind of movie that you're getting yourself into. But this movie is fascinating on how hard it drops the ball. Because, like I said, it's not a bad idea for a sequel to do the meta commentary, to treat the original Blair Witch as if it actually happened. But no, I should be more clear. The Blair Witch Project is a movie in this universe, but they are also saying that it is like a real documentary of events that actually happened. That's what I think is fascinating. There's a lot that you could do there, but this movie just drops the ball at every opportunity. Everyone is acting so far blown out of proportion, over the top. There are just non sequiturs and random cuts and edits that are jarring and make no sense. And I love it. You know, sometimes you just gotta cozy up in the dead of an autumn night in the Midwest and watch really stupid people in the really pretty woods in a really bad movie. This movie is undoubtedly as bad as people say. I just think this movie is also fucking hysterical. I'm really excited. I'm going to be watching it with Jake and Levon next week. I cannot wait. I'm going to get some. Maybe I'll pick up some like pumpkin cider. I'm so excited to watch this movie with them. This movie is so funny. Mild spoiler, not really a spoiler, but the ending of this movie kind of works. If, again, there are moments in this movie where, like, I see the ambition, I see the idea. This is sort of like the inverse of Exorcist 2, where Exorcist 2 has a lot of big ideas and mostly pulls them together. This has a lot of big ideas and pulls none of them together. However, through the mess that this movie is, you can catch glimpses of what could have been. And that's also true of the ending of this movie. I think that movie's ending kind of works. If the movie was better assembled, I could imagine it be super chilling, because the ending of this movie, the reveal, as it were, while like not super unexpected, is handled pretty seriously. Almost has sort of like a Halloween 3 energy to it, now that I think about it. So maybe that's why I like the ending of this movie so much. But, if the movie was better assembled. But also, I don't want this movie to be better assembled. I love this movie the way it is. This dopey, new metal, goth, headbanging, witchcrafty bullshit early 2000s horror movie. God bless this movie. I wish this movie had a Blu-ray release. I would gladly own this movie on Blu-ray. But honestly, now that I've started like picking up stuff on VHS, maybe I should look into getting a VHS copy of this movie. I don't even have a VCR, but actually owning this movie on VHS would be kind of fun. That might be the move. But yeah, I think that's gonna do it for this episode. Did we actually answer the question of, like, why horror movies get a bad rep? Probably not, but I don't know, I just wanted to kind of vibe with you, sit down, have a little chat about horror movies and horror movie sequels, and I had fun, and I hope you did as well. So, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram and subscribe to the Monsters at Midnight YouTube channel. Have thoughts on today's episode or suggestions for future ones? Shoot us an email at monsters.midnight@gmail.com. Midnight spelled incorrectly. You can also follow me on Letterboxd at letterboxd.com/MattFlamingo. I try to write about everything I watch, so if you want thoughts on non-horror movies, you can head over. Until next time, my tender lumplings, Saw X review coming soon, I promise.